The Rudy Valley Hour. Headliners tonight, Harris Evans, Hugh Herbert, Joe Cook.
This is Rudy Valley and Company. Joe Cook, Hugh Herbert, Morris Evans. There's a trio to charm your collective ear. However, a gentleman in Evansville, Indiana asks,
well, if they're so darn good, what are they going to do?
Our reply, Joe Cook will tell, absolutely for the first time on the air, his most famous story, Why I Will Not Imitate Four Hawaiians. Hugh Herbert, assisted by his wife, Anita Pam, will be heard as the average American husband in a sketch called Meet the Folks. And Morris Evans, regarded by many competent critics as the greatest living actor, will play the dual leading role in a dramatization of Edgar Allan Poe's thrilling short story, William Wilson.
Is that all?
No, my dubious friend, that is not all. In addition, you will hear Franklin P. Adams, columnist, wit, and sage, in an address to the nation's problem parents, and Fraulein Ruth Sommer, youthful pianistic discovery of that eminent discoverer, Eddie Cantor. And so to work with bells on.
The Rudy Valley Hour, Act One, presented by the makers of Royal Desserts, Royal Gelatin, and Royal Puddings.
What goes on here in my heart? All this bumping and thumping and jumping when I see you. What goes on here when we part? It keeps bumping and thumping and jumping the whole night through. It will stop a while, so quiet, and then if you happen to smile, there's a riot again. What goes on here in my heart, dear? Could this bumping and thumping and jumping be love? Listening as you should be to Information Please, these days, you've encountered Franklin P. Adams in his current guise as the man who knows the answer to almost everything. Thousands of local citizens know him as the beloved conductor of the Conning Tower in the Post and as the tennis editor of the New Yorker. Last spring, at commencement time, he delivered our baccalaureate address. Tonight, with schools everywhere reopening, he takes the parents of this great nation as his audience. Parents, meet FPA.
Dear parents, Labor Day has come and gone. I got that piece of news from another newspaper man, so I'm confiding it to my unseen public, if he is listening. I worked very hard on Labor Day. I was in Germantown, Pennsylvania, watching Mr. Donald Budge and Mr. Robert Riggs refuse to give the Davis Cup to the Australians. They said, "You can't take it with you." Your chairman, address all complaints care of this station, has asked me to speak to the parents of the nation. I mean the parents of the nation's children, not the father of his country, who had a more impersonal problem than we less prolific parents have. For most of the children, school has just begun. I didn't read that in the paper, nor am I guessing. When four little honeys have to be up and dressed and equipped with lunchboxes before 8 a.m., I know and you know that school has begun. Poor kids, people say, back at school after a glorious vacation. Poor kids indeed. I might add, without fear of successful contradiction, poor kids my eye. Poor parents is my slogan. The Simon Legree kids and the Uncle Tom parents. Papa, whom I will call our hero, not being able to hear the childish trebles yell, "Oh, yeah," or something else that they learned in school today, Papa is wakened at 6:45 by something like, "Hey, Timmy is wearing my socks." The issue being squarely up to me, I rise and straighten out the hosiery problem. I am a rigid disciplinarian, and for me it is a work of only 20 minutes. Mom, the first turn to the left in the kitchen, you can't miss it. Mom is already up trying to divide the day's lunches into four equal parts so that somebody doesn't come home and say, "You gave him the biggest sandwich." And Papa is tired, for he was up late last night trying to earn a little something for useful footwear. It was about 2 a.m. when Papa pleaded eloquently, "10 is my point." "Come on, you 10. My babies need 8 shoes. Come 10. P.S. It looks like a barefoot winter." It seems like yesterday, when Mother Knows Best was enough to tell the children. Or even Father Knows Second Best. Now the kids know best, and I mean it. I think that if a child didn't know better than his parents, he ought to be taken out to the woodshed and spanked until he promises never to let it happen again. Yes, sir, discipline. But discipline is old-fashioned stuff. Spare the rod and indulge the child. Self-expression for children and no expression for parents. Friends, parents, for I feel that all parents are my friends, I am speaking to you now in confidence. I am so in terror that I wouldn't dare say these things if I didn't know that my little darlings were sound asleep at this hour. And if they are not, Mother, send them up to bed this very minute. Show them who's boss, Mom. Show them the way you show me. It used to be that a boy's best friend was his mother. Confide in father was the old advice, too. Well, they still do that. Only this morning, three of my boys, 3 out of a possible 3, confided to me that they now need football suits and shoes. One of them is trying to earn his uniform by selling magazine subscriptions. He has sold one already. To me. A subscription to, of all things, a magazine for parents. The way the children look at it is this. The world is so full of a number of parents who all say their mustn'ts, their don'ts, and their daren'ts. And in conclusion, friends, this is how we parents look at it. The world is so full of a number of children that things for the parents is mighty bewildering.
Presenting Morris Evans in William Wilson, dramatized by William Bowen from the Edgar Allan Poe short story of the same name. Mr. Evans, whose performances over the past 3 years have won for him a position at the top of the International Theater, is currently rehearsing his marathon production of Hamlet, the new season's first major event and the first time New York has seen an uncut version of the tragedy. Tonight he plays both leading roles in the remarkable story you are about to hear. Maurice Evans in William Wilson.
My name is William Wilson, and this is my story. In relating it, I would fain have my fellow men believe that I've been in some measure the slave of circumstances beyond human control. I first encountered my singular namesake in the year 1818. At an early age, I'd given myself up to wine and its diabolical influence. Late one night, I found myself alone, save for the innkeeper in a public house on the outskirts of London. I say I was alone, for so it seemed to me, though I cannot be certain since I was intoxicated. I had just emptied my glass, was calling for more wine.
More wine. Be quick about it. Devil take the place. Cold as ice. Where does the blasted wind come from? Odd sort of place. Wind comes up from nowhere. Innkeep. More wine.
I beg your pardon.
I called for the innkeep. Who the devil are you? Where did you come from?
I am William Wilson.
Feeble wit, sir, since I am William Wilson. Love of this poor joke, who are you? Why do you mock me?
I am William Wilson.
Well, haven't you carry impudence too far? Speak, man, who sent you to mock me so?
It is my duty.
What duty do you speak?
To warn you that you have drunk too much, persist in your foolishness, and disaster will overtake you. Good night, William Wilson.
Wait! Wait a moment! What the devil? Who can he be? His voice echoes my own. Am I dreaming? Is wine besotting my imagination? Strange. Strange. Must need a drink. Innkeep! Innkeep! More wine!
Come in! Coming, sir.
Evidence multiplied that I neither dreamt nor imagined this strange incident. But to proceed, I soon forgot my singular namesake in planning my departure for Oxford. There I manipulated cards and acquired large sums of money from gullible fellow collegians. I soon marked out Glendinning, a wealthy and weak-minded nobleman, as my especial prey. We engaged in play, and with my gambler's art, I let him win, only to ensnare him when ripe. At length, I arranged a meeting which should be final and decisive at the chambers of a fellow commoner, Mr. Preston. Late at night, the other players, having lost heavily to me, dropped from the game, all except Glendinning, who stubbornly insisted he could recoup his losses.
Got to get back. It's bound to change this luck. A man's luck is fantastic. The gods are with you tonight, Wilson.
What stakes do you suggest, Glendinning? This is your last opportunity.
I owe you how much, Wilson?
Exactly £400. What amount do you name for this deal?
Double or nothing. Man, you may lose. There's £4,000 to think of. Luck's got to change. What do you say, Wilson?
It's a large sum for one deal.
Come on, man. You've had all the luck. Are you willing or not?
Done. One deal. £800.
Or not a tuppence.
Exactly.
Then, Denning, you're mad. It's your deal, Wilson.
Will you cut?
There. May the devil bring me luck.
How many cards?
One.
There. And I shall also take one.
There! The devil's good to me. 20, blast it. You'll have a time beating that, Wilson.
Sorry to disappoint you, Glendinning, but I seem to have
21.
Oh, it's not possible. £800. How shall I ever pay it? What shall I do?
I should appreciate your check for that amount, Glendinning.
Oh, but I tell you, I don't know what to do. This will ruin me, Wilson.
Sorry, Glendinning, but I took an equal chance.
What the devil? Who opened the door?
Candles blew out. It's pitch dark.
I can't see a thing. Banks, where are you?
Thought I felt someone brush past me. Where are the lights?
Gentlemen, I trust I have not startled you too much.
Who spoke just then?
Sounded like Wilson. Did you speak, Wilson?
No, I did not. Not a word.
Where the devil is Banks? We must have lights.
I see I have disturbed you, gentlemen, but I am only fulfilling my duty. You do not know the true character of the person who has won so heavily from Lord Glendinning. I will enlighten you. Examine the inner lining of his left sleeve and the several little packages which may be found in the pockets of his morning wrapper.
No! No, no, he lies!
He's gone.
Came and went like a ghost.
Who was the man? His voice sounded hollow. Like a grave.
What do you say to this, Wilson?
I don't know.
Perhaps, Wilson, you can explain this accusation as cleverly as you have dealt your cards.
I tell you, the man must be mad.
I shall explain it for myself. Help me hold him, Carlson. Get the light, Preston.
Let go! I tell you, he lies!
Here's the light. Now we shall see.
You're tearing my coat, you fools!
There is your evidence. Neatly tucked in the lining of his sleeve.
I'm not responsible.
Mr. Wilson, the reason for your card skill is evident. You will, of course, quit Oxford and leave these chambers at once.
As you wish.
Abased, humiliated, I fled, but in vain. My evil destiny pursued me. Scarcely had I arrived in Paris before I had fresh evidence of the detestable interest taken by this Wilson in my concerns. Passing years brought no relief. Indeed, the destroyer of my honor at Oxford thwarted my ambition at Rome, my revenge at Paris, my passionate love at Cairo. I fled panic-stricken from this inscrutable tyranny as from a pestilence, but I fled in vain. At Naples, during the carnival, I attended the Duke de Broglio's masquerade. Here, I planned the last desperate effort to win back my fortune. The affections of Francesca, the beautiful young wife of the aged and doting Duke, were my tools. She had previously confided to me that her costume would be that of Juliet. Seeing her, I hurried to make my way to her presence. Francesca!
Pray, why do you call me Francesca? Is my gown not that of Juliet?
Francesca, Francesca. Even with that mask over your lovely eyes, I recognize you.
Softly. We must be careful. Someone may be watching. The Duke is jealous.
I long to embrace you, kiss your sweet lips, to tell you beautiful eternities.
Patience, my love. And you shall have your wish.
Are you prepared to sail with me to France this night?
Just as we planned.
And the Duke?
He expects nothing. By morning he will be sodden with wine.
Excellent. And the jewels?
They're here in this box. They're worth a great fortune.
It is arranged. I shall dispose of them tonight. Then, Francesca, you and I to Paris, where there is no time, no cares. Only you and I and a world to amuse us. Give me the jewel box. We'll meet as planned, my beloved.
Oh.
What is it, Francesca? You tremble.
I felt a sudden chill. It will pass.
Shall I fetch your cloak?
No, it's nothing.
Then au revoir, my sweet.
Wait. Who is that man approaching us, costumed like yourself?
Do not notice him.
You seem frightened. Is he an enemy? Why do you pale?
Ha! Absurd!
Quiet. He's about to speak.
My unheralded approach disturbs you, but I make no apology. I do but do my duty.
Who are you, sir?
I am William Wilson.
Francesca, we must go.
Wait. Why do you say you are William Wilson? This gentleman is William Wilson.
That is my name.
Mocks Francesca. He's my enemy. seeks to destroy me. Let's go before it is too late.
Your impatience ill becomes you. I would know more of your namesake, your prototype. Continue, sir.
Duchess, you know not the true character of this man with whom you expect to flee. He plans to leave alone. Ask him to produce 2 tickets for passage to France. He will be unable.
Francesca, he lies. You mustn't listen. You mustn't.
Pray continue, sir. Your information interests me.
He plans to sell your jewels and then embark for Spain and alone.
Scoundrel, impostor, cursed villain, you shall not. You shall not dog me unto death. Draw and defend yourself, or I stab you where you stand.
Then he has spoken the truth. Your rage confesses your guilt.
If I must, then so be it.
Oh, no. No.
My time has come, you fiendish mockery. This sword shall find your heart.
Stop. Stop, you must. You
one of
stop.
Us must die.
No, I beg you.
Ah, what do you say now, my cursed nemesis? Your back is to the wall. There, blast you. Now you shall not halt me to my grave.
He's bleeding. Send for a doctor. Quickly, quickly.
Too late, too late. He's dying.
His mask has fallen. Look.
His face. His face. It's my own.
You have conquered, and I yield. Yet henceforth art thou also dead. Dead to the world, to heaven, and to hope. In me didst thou exist, and in my death, see by this image which is thine own, how utterly thou hast murdered thyself.
At your service for Act the Second are Ruth Sommer, Joe Cook, Hugh Herbert. The Rudy Valley Hour, Act Two, brought you by Fleischmann's Yeast, the tonic food that's helping so many people over 40 be vigorous and energetic, and that tones up their digestion and supplies 4 different vitamins.
Find it, no matter where you go. You may be in Kahlua or Kokomo. You may be on the ocean or by a wishing well. The streetlights may be blinking when you get that sinking spell. Cupid gets around back and forth. Now it's North Carolina, then it's China. Doesn't seem to matter at all. You can fall on a hayride or a sleigh ride. So wear a coat of armor when you go out to play. 'Cause love, love, love is where you find it, and you'll find it out someday.
You're listening to Same Time, Same Station, the best of old-time radio. And I'm your host, Jerry Hendigas.
So many of you seem to have enjoyed our linking of the tunes from The Garden of the Moon that we've decided to present them again tonight. Carol Gould will assist. Mid-Atlantic. Scene, the grand salon of a great westbound liner. A ship's concert is in progress. At a piano sits an attractive young Viennese, an unknown girl imported from tourist class because someone heard that she could play. In the audience, awaiting his own turn to entertain, sits a dark, graying, vital gentleman with bright black eyes. The girl starts to play. The man's eyes grow larger and larger, if they could grow any larger. They snap with a fire that has caught and held American audiences for many a year. Ruth Summer plays. Eddie Cantor listens, and Ruth wins a great and powerful friend. Before the passengers are out of customs, Eddie calls us up, and here is Fräulein Ruth. For us, she plays Claude Debussy's brilliant Fireworks, as its name indicates, a descriptive piece illustrating in music a display of fireworks at Versailles. Or it might equally well be said to describe the personality of friend Eddie. Ruth Summer plays Fireworks.
Thank you.
6 years now, we've been trying to persuade Joe Cook to tell our audiences why he will not imitate four Hawaiians. It's Joe's most famous nonsense narrative, long considered a classic of American humor. That he has finally agreed to do it on the air may be perhaps considered a sign that radio has finally come of age. Of course, you never can tell about the Evansville, Indiana cooks. Perhaps this time Joe will imitate four Hawaiians. How about it, Joe?
Thank you, and thank you, Rudy. First, I think I'll play a little tune for you on my ukulele. Play a little tune on my ukulele. No, on second thought, instead, I will give you an imitation of two Hawaiians, each playing an instrument, both at the same time. An imitation of two Hawaiians. That's one introduction. Then I can play. And at first, all I could play was. Till later on, I learned how to play. And mind you, that's much harder than. Imitation of two Hawaiians. Oh, I forgot to explain. The two Hawaiians consist of the first Hawaiian playing the ukulele and the second Hawaiian the violin. That making the two Hawaiians. I'll even do better than that. I will imitate three Hawaiians. Now, a fella can't do any more than that, can he? Three Hawaiians. First Hawaiian, as I said, playing the eucalyptus. The second Hawaiian, the violin, and the third Hawaiian, marking time with his foot. I could imitate four Hawaiians, but I won't. And I will tell you why I won't. My reason for not wanting to imitate the four Hawaiians is a very sad one. Now, this is taken from life, really happened, and this is why I will not imitate four Hawaiians. My grandmother told me a story when I was a boy that I shall never forget. She said, once upon a time there lived a great king, and this king had a son and a daughter, Prince Charming and Princess Charming, whom he called unto himself as was his wont. You see, that's the old English who's there, as was his wont. You know, this is an old-time story supposed to have happened way back in the medieval ages. 4 or 5 years ago this took place. B.V., before Valley. And the king says, my dear children, tell us me, who dost thou lovest best on this earth, or what? And the son, who knew which side his bread was peanut buttered on, said, why, I lovest thou'st, father. And the king said, attaboy, attaboy. And he turns to the daughter, and he says, Fudgy, who dost thou lovest bestest on this earth, or what? And what do you suppose Fudgy said? What do you suppose she told her old father, a man with whiskers longer than any man in the House of David baseball team? The man who had raised her from a tiny babe up to one of the niftiest babes in town. Why, she says, Papa, I love cinnamon the best. Isn't that disgusting? Cinnamon, the stuff that comes on top of rice pudding. The king was aghast. He brushed his stenographer off his lap, drew himself up to his full height of five feet 2 inches, opened the window and threw his chin out and said, what? You love cinnamon or cinnamon? King couldn't say linoleum very good either, you know. He was all right on aluminum, though. He says, what? You love cinnamon the best? He says, then get thee hence from the castle. Scramble. He put her right out of the house. Now, there was a family living on the floor above the king that was looking for a girl to help with the housework. So the princess sees the ad in the morning paper and takes the job. Very nice position. There was no heavy washing to do and no ashes to set out during the summer and no children to take care of, with the exception of one grown son whom she married. A fellow by the name of William Wilson. And now, Mrs. Jones, that's the lady she worked for, she called up the king's castle. She got the right number right away. Of course, this is a fairy story, you see. And the king was just getting ready to go out, just putting on his overalls. The king was on, he was on the night shift that week, was the king. And he says, hello. He says, what's that? You want to invite me around to your house for a wedding breakfast in the morning? Are you going to have food? You are? Okay, count me in. So the king hurries home from the pool room the next morning, slips into his evening clothes, and slides up the banister to Mrs. Jones' apartment. Now just close your eyes and picture this scene of grandeur. The king in his royal robes and the family all seated around the kitchen table blowing bubble gum. The additional guests hanging from the chandeliers and a three-piece symphony orchestra playing under the sink by Irving Berlin. And the king's own daughter, unbeknownst to the king, hiding behind a huge bouquet of lilacs that's standing on the table. But the king takes out his scout knife and starts to peel open the gigantic wedding cake that his daughter had fried that morning for the feast. And what do you suppose happened? What do you suppose happened when the king cut open the cake? You couldn't guess if I gave you from now until that nice curl comes out of Rudy's hair. I'll give you a minute and see if you can guess it. Do you give up? Now, don't say after I tell you. Don't say, oh, that's just what we were going to guess. Or don't say, in case we do guess the right thing, he'll change it around and make it something else, because that's not the way we do business. We've been on this corner for 40 years. We built our establishment. Don't you start a thing while you ought to be... Oh, excuse me, I shouldn't have lost my temper that way, I realize. But do you really give up? All right, then I'll tell you. When the king cut open the cake... Get a good grip on your chairs now. When the king cut open the cake, the whole cake was made of cinnamon. Is that what you were going... Well, why did... You see that? There's lost opportunity. Why didn't you say so? You might have won the prize. Might have won the first... A nice set of broken dishes. Yes, sir? The inside of the cake was cinnamon. The outside was cinnamon. For frosting, she had cinnamon. Even in between the layers, where everybody knows you're supposed to put bananas, she had cinnamon. In fact, as we used to say up at Harvard and Yale, I attended both schools, it was one hunk of cinnamon. The king says, what is the idea of handing me a cake made entirely out of cinnamon? And the daughter pushes over the lilacs, stood up and says, Father, you may have put me out of the house, but I am still fond of cinnamon. And that's why I will not imitate four high whites.
Balcony of your choosing, addressed to the girl or boy of your dreams. Serenades, arranged by Elliot Jacoby, the chorus, and yours truly.
For thee,
Wherever I go, it seems to me I run into Hugh Herbert. I go out to Hollywood to make a movie, and there's Hugh Herbert, acting all over the place. By the way, I understand Warner Brothers have finally made a picture without Hugh Herbert. I go down to Atlantic City, and there's Hugh Herbert, the Steel Pier. I come back, and here's Hugh Herbert, all of which is extremely pleasant, because I don't know anyone I'd rather run into anywhere than Hugh Herbert. Tonight you'll hear Hugh with Anita Pam in Private Life, Mrs. Herbert, in a sketch by Dick Wheel. Hugh Herbert and Anita Pam in Meet the Folks. The scene is the dining room of Joe and Helen Folk. Dinner is over, and with a deep sigh of contentment, Joe relaxes in his chair.
Oh, what a dinner, what a dinner. You know, honey, it's a funny thing. I'm not nearly as hungry as I was when I first sat down. No.
Joe, have you any idea how many times you've said that since we've been married?
Well, let's see. We've been married nearly 23 years. Yeah, 23 years next April. It doesn't seem a day more than 46. 46.
Well, it does to me.
Yeah?
And it would to you if you had to listen to that old gag as often as I have.
Now, listen, honey, just to show you there's no hard feelings, I'll help you with the dishes.
And then what?
What do you mean, then what? What do you mean?
What are we going to do after the dishes are done?
Well, I don't know. I sort of thought of...
Oh, wait a minute. Don't you tell me. I'll tell you.
Yeah, you'll tell me.
You'll sit back in your chair with your slippers on and your coat off.
Oh, yeah.
You'll read the paper and listen to the radio.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you'll play me a game of rummy.
Oh, maybe. Well.
The first yawn will come somewhere between 10:27 and 10:30.
Mm-hmm.
You'll put up a brave fight against the Sandman until 10:45,
mm-hmm.
and then give up.
You said it. Well, what's wrong with that? Sounds to me like a swell idea. Swell idea.
But tonight, darling, we're going to be different.
Uh-huh.
We're going to the movies.
Oh, no, now, Helen, be reasonable. I can stay home and sleep. It won't cost me 40 cents. Hey, what's the picture? What's the picture?
Why Men Marry.
Woo-hoo, I got a good mind to go just to find out. Woo! What are you doing?
I'm calling the cab.
No. If you got money to throw in taxis, it's all right with me. But I told you I was not going out of the house tonight, and I mean it. I'm all in. I got to have some rest, and I'm not going out, and that is final. Mm-hmm.
Come on now, Joe. Admit it. Isn't this better than sitting home like a couple of vegetables?
Vegetable? Who's a vegetable? Who?
Oh, Joe, darling, we're not even middle-aged yet.
No.
Even if we have been married 23 years.
Yeah.
There are all sorts of things we can do.
Yeah.
I love dancing.
Yeah, well, I don't. I can't keep time with the music, and the girl gets in my way.
Joe, you say the funniest thing.
Yeah, that wasn't bad, was it? I can't keep time with the music, and the girl gets in my way. It's very funny, very funny.
Oh, there's a theater right ahead, darling.
Whoa, suffering catfish.
Woo. What's the matter?
What's the matter? Look at that crowd. You don't think I'm going to stand out there and wait in that mob, do you?
Don't be silly, Joe. That means it's a good picture.
Oh, it couldn't be that good. No, they don't make them that good. No.
Well, here we are. Now, come on, Joe. I'll hold the place in the line while you pay the driver.
Yeah, all right, but I still say that... Hey, Helen.
What is it?
I haven't any dough. I got no dough.
What did you do with that $2 I gave you this morning?
Oh, do we have to let the whole town in on this? Huh?
But I did give you $2 this
morning. I know you did, but I left it in my other pants when I changed my clothes.
Oh, you.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, here's a dollar.
Oh, okay. Here you are, driver. Here.
Thanks. Yeah.
You're not the most careless man I ever saw in my life.
Mm-hmm. Well, it wouldn't have to happen if you hadn't made me come out when I didn't want to go. Gee, this may be a good idea of a good time, but your idea, but it ain't mine, sister. Look at all those silly-looking people. Look at them. Look at those silly-looking
people. Oh, stop squawking, Joe. You're almost up to the window.
Yeah, and I suppose we'll have to wait for another half hour until we can get inside. And then what happens? What happens? The boy meets girl. Boy loses girl. Boy gets girl. They've been making that picture ever since the Dead Sea took sick. That's pretty good, too.
Get the tickets.
Oh, give me two, please.
That'll be 80 cents, please.
Oh, 80 cents. Let me see. Oh, Helen, give me another book. Give me the dollar.
Oh, here.
Yeah. Oh, what are you making a show of me before the whole town, handing it out a dollar at a time like as I was a... You think I was a gigolo or something, huh?
Nobody's going to take you for a gigolo. You're not the type.
Here. Take the tickets. Take the tickets.
You forgot your change, mister.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I'll take that if you don't mind.
Oh, boy. I don't like crowds.
Well, you needn't glare at people as if you wanted to eat them.
Yeah, well, listen, Helen, I got a swell idea. Why don't you go to the show and I'll come back and call for you later.
No.
No? Well, What are we standing here for, like a couple of dumb clucks sitting here? I'm tired. My feet hurt. I wish I was home.
Joe, if I hear one more word out of you, I really am going to lose my temper. I'm warning you.
Yeah.
I can be driven too far.
You can be driven too far. What about me? You ought to be thankful that you got a husband who doesn't want to go around gallivanting around at night.
Husband? You don't even know what a husband is.
Oh, yes, I do. A husband's what left of a sweetheart after the nerve has been killed.
Well, that settles it. You can go home, and as far as I'm concerned, you can stay home.
Good. What'll I do with the tickets?
Oh, turn them back. Go ahead. Turn them back.
All right. I will.
You're just an old crab. That's what you are.
Sure, I'm sorry.
I ever married you.
Oh, you're sorry you married me. Oh, don't make me laugh. Oh, I suppose you think living with you has been a bed of roses, huh?
Oh, you'll be sorry you said that to me,
oh,
Joe.
Keep your voice down.
I don't care who hears me. Ticket booth. Get your money back.
All right. Lady, I want to return these tickets.
Well, just a moment, please, and I'll send to the manager.
All right.
If you think it's any fun being married to a man who won't go anyplace, won't do anything, does nothing but abuse me.
Oh, no. Hey, wait a minute.
I beg your pardon. I'm the manager.
Oh,
you want to see me?
Oh, I certainly want to see you. I want my money back on these tickets, though. Oh, yes.
Is there something wrong?
Everything's wrong. I don't like crowds. I don't like pictures. I don't like standing around in theater lobbies. Right now, I wouldn't even care for Shirley Temple.
Well, I'll admit the lobby is a little bit crowded, but that's because we have Keno tonight.
Oh, I don't like Keno. Oh, no, whatever that is. And even if I did like it, I wouldn't like it. Oh, no.
Well, in that case, the least we can do is to give you your money back.
That's all I want, mister. Just give me my 80 cents and we'll call the whole thing square,
Well, if you'll step this way, sir, I'll...
Now, ladies and gentlemen...
Oh, just a minute. They're announcing the Keno winner.
We come to tonight's big event, the drawing for the grand prize of $1,000. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Then here we go. And here's the winning number. Number 947. If the holder of ticket 947 is in the audience or within the sound of my voice, all she or he has to do is to step upon the stage and claim the prize. $1,000 cash.
Say, mister, listen. Do I get my 80 cents or don't I get my 80 cents? Do I get it?
Why, certainly, sir. Here's your 80 cents. May I have the tickets, please?
Certainly. Now, here, I haven't got them. Hey, my wife. Helen, give me those tickets. Helen?
Oh, Joe!
What?
Joe, darling, look!
What?
947!
Yeah?
The winning number!
Woo! Oh, quick, somebody do something! My husband's fainted!
Now, particularly to our older listeners, people over 40.
No wonder I feel as I do. No wonder you wonderful you. You've got two eyes that I couldn't resist. What chance did I have when your lips said, I want to be kissed? No wonder I'm talking out loud. No wonder my head's in a cloud. You're just like sunshine from heaven above. No wonder I'm in
And so, exit rapidly. Class meets here again next week. This is Rudy Valley bidding you all good night.
Included on this program, What Goes On Here in My Heart from Give Me a Sailor. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Well, that'll just about wrap things up for today. Certainly hope.